I'm Steve McLeod, and you are listening to The Community Lounge, the podcast where community managers from the video games industry tell their story, talk about the challenges they face, and share tips to help other community managers do their job better.
I'm joined today by Kara Sarid, who runs an ad hoc community management agency called Cut Teeth. Welcome to the show, Kara.
Thank you for having me. We're excited to be here.
Did I say the name absolutely right? Do you want to actually repeat?
Yeah, you did. You're fine. Fantastic. You can repeat it if you want to, but I think you said it perfectly fine. Yeah.
Karis.
Karis. I think Karis. It's partly because of your accent as well. I won't lie.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and most of my life I've lived in places where I've had a noticeable accent and part of life. Karis, you run an agency for community management. Let's start with that. Before we hear the story about how you became a community manager, tell me about this agency you run, why you run it, when you started it, et cetera.
Yeah, so it's a relatively new thing. So early this year, I want to say in April, I was made redundant. And fortunately for me, you know, I was able to take some time to figure out, okay, what do I want to do next? And honestly, it was so unexpected, that redundancy. Like, I have gone my entire career like trying to pick up on all the signs to make sure that I was never made redundant and that I always knew that it was coming. And then the one time it happened to me, I did not expect it at all. So I didn't know what I wanted to do next. I was like, well, I wanted to do this and now I'm not doing this anymore. So what do I do? So I put out honestly just a post on LinkedIn, kind of thinking what would be nice to do next. I was like, I'd like to do some little bits of work where I get to work with, you know, a bunch of different people and a bunch of smaller things. And then maybe that will lead me in the direction for what I enjoy doing most and what I want to keep doing. And, you know, I might work with someone and be like, oh, okay, let's, you know, go into like a full-time role working with these people. So I did that. And then I think within like 2 weeks, I got 3 clients and I was like, oh, wait, hold on a second. I think there's enough demand for this that I can have like the best of both worlds all the time, which is that I get to work with a bunch of different people on a bunch of different projects and have a ton of variety. Especially I get to work with people that can't afford to have me full time, which is something that is great because sometimes the most interesting projects, they don't necessarily need you full time. So then, yeah, from April to May, I set up my own company. And then it's since May, I've been doing my own thing. I've worked with 5 different clients so far, about to start working with the 6th this time. So these aren't all ongoing. These are just like, you know, here and there. And it's probably the happiest I've been in my career so far, which is kind of crazy that it came from something like redundancy, which is honestly hellish. It's like, what is happening? Yeah. So that's that.
That's amazing. That's taking... finding the silver lining, et cetera, in the dark clouds. Somehow you felt secure enough that you could start your own business. Because this is a risky thing, you know, clients could fall through. You have to start worrying about how to get new clients and so on. Tell me about some moment in which you've struggled with running your own agency so far. I mean, it's been 6 months, right? We're recording in September and you said you started in April or May. Some time in which you thought, oh, I didn't realize it was supposed to be like this or I was supposed to do that. Has there been some experience like that?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think one of them was boundaries.
Tell me more about that.
So there's one of these things where it's like, you know, you can go into like running your own business and you have the confidence of like, okay, I know that I can do this. Like, I know how to put something forward to a client. You have all of that confidence, hopefully. And then, you know, you could be confident, like talking to people, like all of these different elements. But then the thing I found that I have had to gain confidence in is the awkwardness around kind of saying, okay, well, this is actually out of the scope of work that we've spoken about, or actually I've already committed to another client on this day, so I can't do this thing for you then. You know, saying, well, this actually isn't the kind of thing that I do. Can I recommend you to somebody else? Because I think at first you have this, like, although you might have confidence in the stuff that you do, you might, or at least I felt very grateful for the work that was being sent my way. And I wanted to just people please. I want to say yes to people. I want to make people happy. But then sometimes through doing that, like, you can, I don't know, that might not be the best decision long term to do for somebody. So I think that was quite a difficult thing, because I wanted to give my best to everybody. And I was like, but actually, in order to do that, I have to say no to things. And I think that's still something that I am working on. But yeah, that was unexpected. Like, genuinely, the first few weeks of me doing my own thing, I was talking to people. I think it was at Develop. I think I even may have said this to you when we met at Develop, which was, it felt like every single week I was learning something new. And I was like, oh my God, I really have like opened up a new like skill tree of learning. Like, I felt like, you know, I've worked in community management for like 5 or 6 years at this point. And I feel like, to a certain level, like, I have an awareness of what I know and what I don't know, you know, like, I've been around long enough to kind of see that and see the areas that I could be better at and things like that. But then going into your own business, it's like, oh, and then this whole new thing like opens up and you're like, oh my God, there's so much more to learn. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that never stops in running your own business. I've been doing it for a long time. Yeah, every day, every week. Hey, let's go back to your founding story. How it all started for you as a community manager.
Yeah.
You can maybe start from something that happened in your childhood or something already as an adult, wherever you'd like to start. But what is it that brought you into becoming a community manager?
It honestly is a bit of an odd story. I feel like fate just kind of like pushed me in that direction and then just kept pushing. Like, I kept getting signs and I kept ignoring them. So basically, like, originally what kind of like drew me to the games industry was game art. Like, I've always loved art and I wanted to be a game artist. I wanted to do environment art. And so that's what I went to university for. But whilst I was at university, I got involved in a game development society, and, you know, I would work doing like support on like festivals and stuff on the side, and like all these things that involved communicating with people and bringing people in to do events. For instance, I would organize speakers to come in from the industry and talk to this game development society, or get involved with organizing game jams, or like all of these kind of things. Like, a lot of things that involved like being quite extroverted, like talking to people, doing a lot of comms, like communications, like a lot of that kind of stuff. And I remember having this speaker come in, and I did this like quite like, you know, I thought it was quite a professional thing. I was like, you know, you're coming in and you're doing this talk for us, but then afterwards, can I take you to dinner? Because I wanted to like ask them some questions about like their career, and like, you know, they were doing some really cool work working on like Rainbow Six Siege and like stuff like that, on like all of the weapons. And I was like, I'm gonna ask them some questions and I'm gonna be an artist. And this person spoke to me and they were like, oh, you better be careful because you're gonna become a community manager. And I was like, I was so insulted, because like, I was like hustling in order to get into like a career being a game artist. And like, at the time, the way I thought about things, having never been in the industry, was that if you didn't work on part of a game that actually ended up being visible in the game, then was that worth it at all? Like, if you didn't get to be like point out a tree and be like, I'd worked on that tree, or if you didn't get to point out a line and say, I wrote that line, or, you know, all of those kind of things, then how could you get fulfillment from working in games? So for someone to say, oh, you know, you'll be careful, you'll end up a community manager, I was like, no, I don't want that, because those people, they help, they're out of the way, they don't really get involved in the games. That's what I thought at the time. And so I tried to avoid that. I tried to avoid it so much, but it kept coming for me. And then I did this essay in my second year, and it was about toxic communities. And so I reached out to some community managers and I started talking to them, and I really enjoyed doing this essay. I focused on things like League of Legends even like Pokemon Go, because that was like huge at the time, and like all of these different communities, and I really enjoyed like learning about them and all of the like little, they're like tiny little societies. That was just really enjoyable. And then from there I started being like, oh, maybe this is the way that I should go. And then bit by bit I moved over to working in community management.
And have you changed your opinion of what community managers are and what they do? I hope so.
Significantly, like significantly. It is honestly insane how wrong I was. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people still have that idea that, oh, if you're a community manager, you don't have involvement in the game. You're just, you know, you're just managing forums over there, or you're just doing customer service. And that's just
or posting memes.
Yeah, or posting memes. And it genuinely isn't the case. Like, there is so much of my work that has ended up in games because so much of my work is keeping the conversation going between developers and players. And developers listen to me and players listen to me. And so, you know, your opinions and your thoughts and things do get into the game. That's obviously not the intention of being a community manager, but it does happen like that. Like, the reason for a lot of events and a lot of, like, people's most like happy memories of being in a game community can come from a community manager, and that's mm-hmm. you know, that can be in game as well. So yeah, it's changed a lot, and I feel kind of ashamed that I suppose I looked down on it originally because I didn't really know what it was, whereas now I'm like, oh man, I wish more people realize like how much of, you know, community management is involved in making games.
It can be make or break for some games.
Hey listeners, a short interruption. When I'm not hosting the Community Lounge, I run Feature Upvote, a platform for managing player feedback. When you use Feature Upvote, your players can submit and upvote suggestions to improve your game in a single place. This gives you the data you need to develop a game that meets player expectations. And you can say goodbye to the confusion of trying to keep up with feedback scattered across discussions on Discord and Steam and Reddit. Learn more at featureupvote.com.
Yeah, there was definitely a period of time, and this was like, I want to say, how old would I have been? I don't know, definitely like early 20s, where you'd have like lots of game developers and stuff on Twitter, and there would be people at the time were still discussing our games art. Like, that was still a thing that people were talking about. But also, people would be like, oh, you can't call yourself a game developer if you're a community manager. And you know, maybe that is still there sometimes in the back of people's minds, but it's so, I just don't think that's true. I really just don't think that's true at all. You are helping the development of games. I think some of the most kind of like widely known, like respected, appreciated, like viral games are like that because they are responsive. And the reason they're responsive is because they have great community managers.
Yeah, 100% agree. Let's move on to a story of a memorable positive moment as a community manager that you'd like to talk about.
Sure. Okay. This one I actually really, really love. So there was a game that I worked on back when I was at a publisher, and this game is called Mecha Jammer. And it was made by like a husband and wife team, and it was a really, really, really tiny team, and they had like a whole kind of like Kickstarter and stuff behind it. It was really cool. And we worked really hard from when that game released because it needed a bunch of updates, you know, quite frequently. And so I found myself like working like obviously like paid, but like later hours, earlier hours. A lot of the community were kind of like American based as well. But honestly, it's like some of the best memories.
And for the audience, you're in the UK, so this is a time zone problem. Yes.
Yeah. And they were based in New York. So there you go. But it was kind of, I have some of my best memories of working on that. And there were so many different challenges and stuff that came up. I really feel like it leveled me up as a community manager. But one of the best things was that it was getting kind of like closer to Christmas. And there was like one last patch before I knew that I would have like a whole month off over Christmas. And I was like putting this patch together and I was like writing it down, you know, like all like in the Steam update thing. Because that was my role. That was what I would do, all of that stuff. And they got to a bit where they were talking about new characters that they'd added to the game that could be like companion characters. And I was like going down the list and I was like writing it over from the email that I had, blah, 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 blah. And then my name was on there and I was like, huh? And then I like checked back at the thing and then I was like going through messages and I was like, have I just like copied this wrong? Am I going insane? Have they put this there by mistake? And then I had to reach out to them and I was, I'll cry. But like, I had to reach out to them and I was just like, is that meant to be there? And they were like, yes. Like, we decided to name a companion after you. And we're like really thankful for all the work that you've done so far. No, I'll cry.
That is so cool. It's a real genuine way of showing you that they appreciated your work.
Yeah, and it was a surprise. Like no one had mentioned it. So I don't know how they figured that I would find out. I don't know if they knew that I did the patch notes or like whatever. But I was just like, that really touched me because for them, in a way, it's a small thing. Like, you know, it's just changing a name. But for me, I think especially going into community management, like I said in that story before, where I felt like being a community manager, you can't touch the game. It's not something that's in the game. And, you know, having that thought, this was a moment where it's like, although my opinions had already changed, I already knew that I could, it was like a very tangible thing of like, oh, that's my name. I'm in there. I'm in a game. Isn't that insane?
And you said that when you were into the game art, you thought you had to have be able to point to a line of code or a tree. Yeah. But what better if being able to point to an actual in-game character and say, that's me.
Hey, yeah. It was,
that's wonderful.
It was, yeah, I really like it. That's my favorite story. I love it. What was funny though afterwards was I was like, over Christmas, I was trying to, it was quite a difficult game. It was intentionally difficult. It was kind of like the first like early like Fallout games. I was like, how do I get to my character? How do I get to me? And so I'm like going through the game and they're like, oh yeah, yeah, they're on the prison island. And I'm like, my character's on the prison island. And I was like, should I be insulted by this? But no, I think they just happen to be in a fun area of the game.
Now I'm going to change the tone of the interview dramatically. And I want to ask you about a hard challenge that you face as a community manager that stands out in your memory. Is there anything that comes to mind?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's like a softer answer to do with this, but I feel like there's also like the honest.
Go with whichever one you feel more comfortable talking about.
Let's do a little mixture of both. So I think the honest truth is like when things go terribly wrong and then you're just there and you're like, oh no. And it's not always a situation where you can clearly communicate to a community what is going on. So for instance, there was a game I worked on where there was a marketing idea to do a ARG. Do you know what an ARG is?
ARG, no.
It's kind of like an online game where there's lots of little hidden clues and it's kind of like a mystery. And so you're like, oh, here's a riddle. And then from this, I found a YouTube link. And then from this, I jumped to this and jumped to this. And like, we thought this would be a really cool like marketing stunt, right? But unfortunately, the people that had put it together, they didn't necessarily have a great deal of experience doing this. And the internet is a wild beast. Mm-hmm. You have no idea like how to set a skill level on that kind of a thing. So the start of it went out and within seconds it was solved. And this was meant to be like a multiple day long thing. Like we had intentionally not released all of these clues because we wanted to stagnate it. But people managed to get it immediately. And it was just like people cheating, like what is going on here? And it was just like a total panic because you're having more and more people come over to see that what's going on. And then immediately they're seeing it solved and they're like, oh, is the person really solved it? Like, are we doing this? Other people are further on down the clue. And you're just like, okay, do we admit that this has just gone really, really wrong? do we tweak it a little bit? Like, how do we go about this? And that's something where, especially because it's live, you're having to make that decision in real time with a team of people and with the developer, and everyone has different opinions. And that's stressful, not to say the least. So in the end with that one, we ended up being like, right, okay, we're going to do a mixture of both. We're going to admit that, oops, that was a little bit easier than we thought it was going to be. And then work a bit over time, paid over time yet again, in order to put together something that lasted a little bit longer. But yeah, it's definitely one of those things where you can make the best plans in community management of like, oh, like, we're going to have this strategy, we're going to do this thing, we're going to do these events. But when the community actually comes along, they could be a little bit different to what you thought they were going to be like. And then you just have to be good at reacting to those kind of things as they come up. But that can be difficult sometimes in a situation like that, where you're like, oh no, we really didn't expect this.
It's easy from a distance to say, well, this is what I would do, or this is what you should do. But when the people are there saying, well, what happens now? And and you've got to decide. Yeah, was the director of the studio or somebody very senior around to talk to and help make the final decision? Or did you have to just decide on the spot?
It was a little team of us. Fortunately, it was a little team. So, you know, it wasn't, I guess can't really necessarily go in depth on it, but it was a little team of people. We just had to figure it out on the spot, basically. Yeah.
I like it. Things don't always go to plan, but you got through. Yeah. Hey, let's move on to some practical information, some practical questions. As when you first started being a community manager and you didn't really know what to do apart from your natural outgoing personality that led to someone say you're going to be a community manager, this is a long, long question. How do you learn to do your job better? How do you learn to do what it takes to be a community manager?
Ooh, interesting. Like, how did I learn, or how do I continue to learn now?
How did and do you learn? What are the resources you've used or the strategies you've used to learn how to do your job? Because like, you didn't study to be a community manager, but somehow you found yourself doing this.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think what kind of helped was that I had grown up essentially entirely online. So I think something about it was that it was almost like innate in a way. Like I said, like with someone telling you, you better be careful, otherwise you're going to turn out to be a community manager. And that wasn't the only comment I had. I had quite a few people saying that. So I do think it was something that came naturally. But I also think it was something where I always enjoyed being part of communities. And I don't necessarily mean just gaming communities. I mean, kind of like, I did a lot of volunteering for like different events. Like, those could be events at like games festivals or like graffiti festivals or music festivals. I always like got involved with those kind of things and found those really fun to do and really fun to meet people. And so I think something is that I took inspiration from a lot of different types of community. It wasn't just that I was only looking on Discord or only looking on Reddit, although I was in those places too. It was also that I was taking part in like in-person communities, and even in the things that I was interested in, seeing, even if I didn't take part in those kind of communities. So for instance, like I really do quite like Taylor Swift a lot. And although I'm not like on her Reddit or posting in her forums or like those kind of things, I do keep an eye on what's going on there and how their community is reacting to stuff, and, you know, being quite online with like seeing what's happening in those spaces.
From the point of view of her team and how they manage the community.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're masterful, I have to say. I don't think I'm Taylor Swift's target demographic, so I'm not a fan, but I have heard some of the amazing things her team does. Like when there was a little bit of criticism for using a private jet, and what was the thing they did? They managed to get the word jet associated with... That was maybe just a conspiracy theory, but...
That was a conspiracy theory, but I know what you're talking about. They did a game with Google where you had to search certain terms and you could unlock like Easter eggs about her next album. I love how I already know this. But yeah, people had a conspiracy that because like jet, which was like in a song lyric, was coming up as a search term, then it would change the way the Google algorithm showed her flying her plane and those kind of things. Who knows?
Yeah.
But
as I was starting to say it, I realized, wait, this sounds like a conspiracy theory. I should say.
I feel like we've had two in this episode already with the Pizza Express and now Taylor Swift.
This is what happens when you know about things vaguely from news headlines and no more, and then one should not open one's mouth when one only knows from a news headline, and that's all. Let's move on to my next question for you. If someone listening is about to become a community manager for the first time, what tips do you have for them for their first, say, days or weeks or months in the job? What should they be doing?
Interesting. I think like the first thing you have to do, and this is also one of my favorite things to do, if it is an already existing community, you've got to go deep into the lore of that community. Uh-huh. Like you have to, and I'm not just talking like, oh, what's this game about? I'm talking like, which of the moderators hate each other because of XYZ reason? I'm talking about, do the community have beef with the developers for one specific thing? Are the developers mad at the community for something that happened 2 years ago? Like all of these things, because you want to make sure that you are coming in and you're just like clicking with the community and that nothing that you do or any kind of thing is going to trigger any of these maybe sore spots from the community's past.
How would one go about finding out these things?
Oh, okay. So one of them is that you need to talk to the developers, like inside out. Like you're not just like, you don't just go in like, okay, what's your game about? You also need to be like, okay, what's the history of this community? Are there any like particular members that do certain things like that could be standouts of maybe not having the best behavior, or like people that you can depend on, or you know, like all of those kind of things. But then also moderators, as moderators, they usually they're locked in, like they know. Mm-hmm. They know the lore, and they're like, oh yeah, this guy used to be moderator, but he's not anymore. So finding out all of that history, I think, is really helpful. You'll also find it out if you're going back through like previous forums, or if you're doing your research on news that's happened before. Even if you're just looking at comments, you'll sometimes see players will refer to something in the past and like, oh yeah, you remember that update? And you're like, what was that update? So like kind of like building a bank of that information is really helpful, that you're kind of like immersing yourself in it as if you have been in that community from the start. So yeah, I would say that's the best thing you can do. But it's also really enjoyable because you're like, what am I finding out right now?
Yeah.
Like, what is going on? Yeah.
Like an investigative journalist.
Yeah, exactly.
Really undigging the past. Look, we're actually running out of time, but there is still one very important question I want to ask you. What game have you been playing lately?
Ooh. Have I even been playing a game recently? This is not a good thing, Steve. What game have I been playing recently? I haven't been playing any games recently. I have two of my best friends are getting married. One of them got married last weekend. Shout out to Freddie and Sarah. Congratulations. And then my other friend's getting married this next weekend coming up. And I've been a bridesmaid for both of them. Also shout out to Rhianne and Sean. You're going to have a great wedding. Let's go. And because of that, my whole time has just been wedding.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess you're in that part of a business in which it is all consuming. Even when you do try to set boundaries, it's all consuming for a while.
Yeah. You have to give up for a little bit. You have to be like, okay, it would be so nice if I could just clock off here, but that's not happening. So let's go.
A community manager in the video game industry who gets no time to play video games.
This is so common, though. I feel like this is so common. Yeah, I think the last game that I played that I really enjoyed, because I think a lot of the games I play nowadays are with friends that live a little bit further away from me, is Oh Dear. Have you heard of this?
No, I haven't heard of Oh Dear.
I can't believe I'm doing this on a podcast. So basically, the way that it works is you're either a deer that is trying to fit in on an island of like other kind of like NPC deer and act like a normal deer, or you are hunters and you are having to figure out which the deer is acting a little bit suspicious.
What?
And hunt that deer down, basically. And the deer's like top move that it can do is if a hunter is getting like too close to it, It can fart, and then it shoots off across the map, and then it gets lost in the deer again. So that's what me and my friends play.
What platform is that on?
Steam. It's on Steam.
That sounds fantastic. Really fun. Well, we need to wrap up. I still have plenty of things I could still ask you, but we have come to the end of our time. So, Karis, again, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, it's been lovely. It's been nice to have a chat with you.
And where can listeners get in touch if they'd like to know more about what we've discussed today?
Yeah, that's either on my LinkedIn. So that's Karis Reed. I guess my name is going to be in the podcast header. So there we are. Or cutteeth.co.uk.
Okay, we'll have both of those in the show notes. Okay, thank you. Bye.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks again for listening to this episode of the Community Lounge. If you enjoyed this episode, please spread the word and share it with friends and colleagues who you think would also enjoy it. You can find all the episodes on your favorite podcasting platform or at featureupvote.com/thecommunitylounge.